the raucous part.
Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm right here with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D. Kester, the Doctor of Democracy.
And we are here at Ben's Next Door, 1213 U Street, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. There's plenty of room in here. We're doing this show live, so come on in. We've got a mic here. We're going to have a very interesting subject tonight. I think you're going to have a lot of, we're going to try to have some fun with it and try to maybe hopefully kick around some serious information too. So come on down 1213 U Street, be a part of the Raucous Caucus, and we got a microphone so you can be heard live on the air. Tonight, we're going to talk about something interesting. And what I'm going to talk about...
As opposed to those other nights?
As opposed to when Mark and Terry, host. We're actually going to talk about something interesting.
Go ahead, Garland.
So what we're going to talk about...
Keep going,
Garland. Keep going, Garland.
You're doing fine, Garland. Don't give up. Don't give up. You've got it. You've got it.
Tonight, we're going to talk about the term... Labels. What labels?
Black
are.
Label. Now, black label beer. It's one of my favorite beers. Thank you.
I like black label Jack Daniels.
Black label Jack Daniels.
Black
that's
label.
Good too.
Well, what we're going to talk about
good
is
labels, those labels
that actually apply to people. Now,
black
some
label
may
applied
wonder
to me for years.
Why I don't just talk about stereotypes. But you can't have a stereotype without.
Are we broadcasting stereo?
Yeah.
Or not?
Yeah? Of some type. Okay. So technically we're already there.
All right. This is not punny.
Right. Yeah. So at any rate.
Not punny?
I know these guys are going to refudiate anything I have to say.
That's true.
Refudiate?
Yes. Yes.
Did he say right. refudiate?
Refudiate?
William Shakespeare Palin has told me this.
To quote Sarah Palin. But I'm going to give it a shot anyway.
William Shakespeare Palin.
Let's talk a little bit about labels and what they are. Simply, very simple, we apply labels daily. We apply labels to people. You're black, you're white, you're gay, you're whatever. The issue actually is not the labels. Here's the issue I want to talk about. What we do is when we apply a label to a person, we have certain characteristics that we expect that person to live up to as a result of us applying the label to them. It has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with us. We expect you're black or you're whatever you are, so you're supposed to be a certain way. And when you're not that way, we act like there's something wrong with you. I've had it happen to me in my life, and I'm sure both of my guests, for one reason or another, have had people look at you and say, well, you're whatever, you're white. Why do you know about James Brown or whoever it may be?
That silly, silly Mark actually called me a pessimist.
A pessimist?
Can you believe that?
I labeled you a pessimist.
I replied with equal dignity by labeling him a Pollyanna.
Right. There we go.
After I labeled him a pessimist, he ran in the room, started crying, and locked the door.
I did.
It started raining over him.
As pessimist Tim
said, it was all going to hell.
Right.
Well, that's what they expected.
Yeah.
But that's not what
the question with labels.
What happened is I solved all the problems of the world in 35 minutes.
Really? I must have missed that show.
No, actually, I think he actually talked about all the problems of the world in 35 minutes, but, it came up with some new ones.
If it's Terry, you probably talked about the banks for 35 minutes. But anyway,
pretty much everything in the world was a problem.
Talk about the banks. Talk about labels. How about Goldman Sachs?
What we're going to talk about is a number of things when it comes to labels, and that is, number one, why is it that we cling to them like we do? Why is it that when we see somebody and that person doesn't fit the label, we act like there's something wrong with them and we hold on to that label for all we're worth? And why is it that we feel that the only way to live is to constantly use labels? And let's be honest, is there anything good about labels? Are they constructive? Back in the old days of tooth and claws, you had to call me king. You had
that's
to have
a label.
Back in Terry's day, when we were still running around, the Iron Age, the Bronze Age, and stuff actually had other tribes running around and animals, and you had to be able to say that's a saber-toothed tiger.
Right. You had to know the difference.
But now,
Doctor of Democracy rings true. It's a wonderful label.
Yeah, so let's talk about a couple things here. Let's talk about a couple of the things.
It's interesting. Just before the show, I was reading to you, Garland, some comments on my website
from
some conservative members of the American family who were arguing that Barack Obama, let me get this right, is a Kenyan socialist Muslim. I think that's what they were saying. Or a communist, or the Antichrist, or something like that. They really love their labels.
And what's interesting, what's interesting about that, and that is...
Yeah, he's born from a white mother in Kansas.
Yeah, what's interesting about that is that we use labels to define people. We use, you're a socialist, you're whatever, all of these things, and we use labels for our own purposes. So tell me, Mark, in your life, tell me something that's happened to you regarding labels. Either something that you've done, something that you saw, something you expected, or something that's happened the other way around. Have you had any issue with labels in your life?
Who hasn't? I get labeled all the time. I get labeled. Funny thing is I get labeled from the right. I must be a leftist, and then from sometimes specific. I've even had people on this program call me a rightist. So I get pushed around all the time politically. People usually don't believe I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a Southerner. I'm a third
Where's
generation
your accident?
Southerner.
Where's your accent?
I think it's because I'm Jewish.
Where's
think,
your gun rack?
Ah, Jews don't live in the South.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
They do
country and western.
You're from
though,
Brooklyn.
Don't.
Absolutely.
You're
yeah,
from Brooklyn.
I've had people think I'm from New York. I've never lived in New York. I think people get labeled all the time. It's fascinating to me. It's like if I go and I say, for example, on the air that. As I said recently, that educated people don't believe Barack Obama is a
right,
socialist.
Right.
And I had a poll that showed, actually, if you have a higher education, mm-hmm. you're very unlikely to think Barack Obama is a socialist. If you haven't been educated, then you might think he is. And then immediately I'm being labeled, you and your fancy elitist education. I'm just citing the poll, you know. I just cited the poll. But I think people are quick to label because it's very easy to put yourself – or put others, even more importantly, in some predetermined package that you can then say, Obama's a socialist and I hate him. I don't hate him because he's black. I hate him because he's a socialist,
yeah, right.
You see. And so they put him in this nice little pretty package that is in something they think is wrong, and then, boom, they don't have to really think about it very much.
Terry,
I have something very interesting to ask Terry,
and this is why, because something you related to us in an earlier show, and that is there was a time when you lived in a neighborhood that was predominantly African-American, and you were one of the – only white families or one of the
three white right,
families
three
white. And
white. Are you white, Terry?
Are you
labeling him?
Yeah,
Carl?
Yeah.
Maybe he's black.
Yeah.
You don't know.
I'm other.
Maybe he's an octoroon, as they said in Plessy versus Ferguson.
So you're in a situation where in a country that's predominantly white, generally the African-Americans or Latinos, whoever feels they're minorities, and not a lot of white people experience what you went through in that neighborhood. So tell us a little bit about what it was like and, you know, kind of a reverse of what we're used to being labeled and people seeing you as different in the neighborhood.
Well, there's so many stories I could tell you about.
Yeah, give us a couple, man. Give us a couple good
could
ones.
Tell you
I would prefer true ones, but do the best
true.
You can
they're
do.
They're all true. Montego putting a gun to my head because he was a hired hitman and going to shoot me.
Montego?
Montego. That was his hitman's name. His real name was Manuel. In the daytime, he was a baker. In the nighttime, or when off duty, he was a small-time hitman.
Kind of like Mark. He's on Fox News in the day, right. And he comes on with us.
Don't say that word. Don't say that word. But you know, the most important thing actually being...
That would be in the nighttime. The baker's the good part.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We're in the whole metaphor now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. But being half serious, I mean, the thing that I found out it was so wonderful is because not knowing it, even though I was one of the three whites in the whole black area, South Street, Philadelphia, those of you know South Street, I was adopted by the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I was adopted by the community without even knowing it. And a group of guys, just make yourself at home, Anthony. Sit over there. And, one day a group of punks came up and threatened me, throw up in a car and threatened mm-hmm. me. And immediately that car was surrounded by my neighbors, most of whom I didn't know, who simply just said, get out of here. He's one of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I never felt so damn safe in my entire life. Mm-hmm. You know, and the whole time that I stayed on South Street, I knew that, you know, I was safe, I was protected, even though I was, you know, totally in a minority there. And it destroyed, you know, any stereotype that I was carrying around,
mm-hmm.
because here were these guys who were basically my friends and protectors, even though I didn't know them.
And I imagine that was interesting because when we carry, we're facing a person, particularly in a certain circumstance like that, and our labels are kind of bumping heads because we're in a community or we're amongst other people and we have this label of who they are and they have this label of who we are. And rather than actually dealing with the real person, we're looking at this label saying, well, you know, Mark's Jewish, so I imagine he's like this or that. And we even have a derogatory comment that we'll have.
It's shorthand. It's a way to not look at a person, not analyze an individual, not see who that person is. It's a way to say, oh, shorthand, they're this, they must be that.
And what one thing we don't do, and that is it causes us, this is something I think is bad about it. It causes us not to recognize the individuality of people, but not just that, because the reality is there are groups that particularly, I'm an African-American, Basketball, when I was growing up, was like a religion in my community. All the kids played basketball. A friend of mine is Puerto Rican. When he grew up, he said everybody played baseball. You know, baseball was big in Puerto Rico. You know, you have particular groups and particular cultures where people in that culture like a particular sport, eat a particular food, etc., culturally. But even within cultures, there are very different subgroups. Now, as an example, I imagine within your culture, Mark, within the African-American culture, within the Caucasian culture, within all of them, there are various...
Caucasian?
You know what's interesting? I just said the Caucasian culture.
White culture, all right, I guess there's a white culture. Caucasian culture. Weird to hear that word.
Yeah, it really is. And it brings out something.
Like, I don't know anyone from the Caucasus. I think I know a few Armenians.
And it brings out something interesting.
Okay, I know some people from the Caucasus.
In our country,
that's
something. Yeah, we do something really screwed up. And we make the label of one big label, black and white.
Asian and Latino.
Yeah, but for the most part.
Republican and Democrat.
Black and white is big for this reason. You've got people who are, you've got the Irish, you've got all of the, what used to be called, what generally, if we go back a bit in America, back to 50s and 60s, et cetera, there were the WASPs, and they were called the white ethnics.
That's right.
Which were the Irish and the
Italians
and
the Jews.
Et cetera, the Jews, right.
Yeah.
But then black was a whole complete other culture. It was considered all one. Now, it's interesting
I just to say, as a little kid, being very confused by white and black. Because I looked at my skin, and I'm like, well, I'm not white, and I'm not black.
That ain't white, Charlie.
I mean, I guess I'm brown, but I'm not technically, quote, brown, unquote. I was very confused, because even the most white people I saw looked kind of orange to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't white. I mean, I never met an albino, and most blacks were not coal black.
Right.
I mean, I remember being years before I finally understood
what they were talking about.
But, Mark,
that's because you've been looking at life through, obviously, rose-colored contact lenses.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's the real problem here.
Listen, I think orange people, like Boehner, the majority leader of the Republican, they have rights, too. They just shouldn't control the House.
Well, it's funny. My daughter, when she was five, and she started in whatever it was in school, and she came home one day, and she said, Daddy, I don't understand something. I said, what? She said, why do they call black people black and white people white? She said, when black people are really kind of like brownish and yellow, and she said, and white people are really kind of pink.
Yeah.
Because a little kid...
It should be the pink and the brown.
With
the
little kid, the label to them simply meant
color.
Literally,
me too.
Color.
It meant color.
And then
I got to the point where I was actually darker in the... And I can be in the summer when I've been outside for a while. Darker than some of the black kids in my class. Not many. They denied it, but I insist. And then it got very, very confusing.
Yeah.
But you know what? But they told my mom she had to ride in the back of the bus. My mom was in the South in the 50s, and she grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. We get quite dark in the summer. I mean, not as dark as you, Garland, but darker than some of your African-American friends.
Well, something interesting about my own self with labels. True story. And we don't realize how much labels affect us. Okay. I was probably, let's see, it was in the early 90s. So I was
53,
I was about 70. I just turned 70 in fact.
70, 75,
no, it was
like that,
when
yeah.
I say 90s, it was actually the 1890s.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
okay.
At any rate, so there were some issues going on. I was involved in some discrimination lawsuits, I'll just put it like this, at that time. And I remember going to...
You shouldn't have been discriminating.
Yeah, right. Well, I was actually discriminating against others.
We can't...
Oh! No, just joking.
We can't claim that Garland is discriminating.
But at any rate,
come on.
This is interesting, and
it doesn't have
weird
much taste.
No.
It's true.
I went to a meeting at the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and it opened my eyes about something that I felt about the black and white issue. Because I went in there, and we were talking about race discrimination, and I heard attorneys, which were white attorneys, and we were Jewish attorneys, talking about race in a way that I only thought African-Americans understood. I couldn't conceive that someone who wasn't an African-American, that was either, Caucasian or Jewish, could actually understand. And I was like the only African-American in the room, and we're talking, and I'm like, this is weird. How in the world do they really understand this stuff? This doesn't make sense. So as an African-American, I had a label of, I didn't realize it, I had a label of all white people seeing things the same way. So obviously, when I walked up to white people, I had a predetermined thought of how they were, and I had no clue. I thought I was the most open-minded person in the world. I say that to say this. As the three of us sit here and we think we're the most open-minded people in the world, we probably are struggling with a lot of the same label issues that we preach against on a regular basis.
Well, there's no way you can avoid it. I mean, it's something that, in fact, is humanly natural, unfortunately. So, I mean, therefore, you really have to start making, you know, to be serious for a moment, you have to make a decision to not be prejudiced, to not be biased, to not let labels rule. Because it is a natural instinct. It's tribal. Mm-hmm. It's protective. It's a way of feeling, obviously, which we haven't talked about, but it's a way of feeling superior. You know, if I label you and put you in some classification, then that, you know, defines you. I'm not easily defined, so therefore I'm superior. So all of those things actually, in fact, are natural to the human condition. The point is, you know, we've got to make that decision not to behave that way and not to let that thinking dominate or play into our thinking.
But I think we also have to see where liberals are most likely to label. I had a woman who listened to my show for years and years and years.
What happened to her? It was just a brain overload? Synapses died? I mean, you know, obviously it hurt.
I hate to answer your question because she actually did die.
See? Sorry.
Rest in peace, Vicky, from upstate New York. Let's listen to my show. She was an evangelical Christian, a white woman who was very conservative and disagreed with me on probably everything. But she listened. And she listened to my show day after day, week after week. She commented on my website. She told me why she thought I was wrong. And we became friends of a sort. I mean, you know, she was a daily listener, and she was always commenting, and she was challenging me, and sometimes I had to admit she was right. And we came to really respect each other, and it was very good for me to see someone who was not someone I politically agree with, someone who I would consider to have some pretty, I don't know how to use the right word. Let's say some ideas that I found even offensive.
Just pick any label you like and
throw it up. Well, exactly. But it turns out she was a very kind human being. She had a good heart. I disagree with her. She disagreed with me. But the fact that we treated each other with respect led us to have a real strong bond for her. And when she did die, I felt very, very bad because I felt like a part of me died.
Yeah, and you know what? And we're guilty here also because – and we all are, but we can talk about it a little bit. Week after week, we say the Democrats, and
then
we say the Republicans, and we say that in a very, very broad fashion. Now, let me say this.
I'm trying to tell you guys.
I think that one's fair. No. That label, I think, is fair.
Okay, go ahead. Mark's going to defend a label.
I'm going to defend a label.
Oh, good God.
Today.
Let me get my rubber stamp.
Right here. No, listen up.
Okay.
Right here in 2010.
Okay.
The Republicans have had a very unified position in Congress, with very few exceptions. You know, Scott Brown, Susan Collins, and Olympia Snow are about the only one. The Republicans have been voting in lockstep. So when the entire Republican Congress, when 200 people all vote the same way, then at that point, I think you could say the Republicans. Now, maybe I should specify the Republicans in Congress, because I don't mean all Republicans in the nation.
Yeah, but
when
they're
marching in lockstep, then we can call them in lockstep.
No, even there, you're not. I disagree with that, Mark, because, I mean, I understand the concern that we have politically, but the fact that they're voting in a block does not mean that that's the way they all think. I mean, you know that as well as I do.
Good point.
You know,
there's differences.
There's much individual.
There's a huge difference between Rand Paul and Scott Brown.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you know what? The other thing is this. I remember when Arlen Specter voted. What was it he voted in favor of when he got? Was it the
stimulus package?
The stimulus package when he got kicked out of out of the party. And he said then. He said in there was an article, and he said, you know, back in the cloakroom, several of my Republican colleagues said, you know, we're proud of you. We wish we could do it too. We really believe this thing has to go through, but we got to go home to a primary, and, you know, we don't want to lose our position.
Hey.
Looks like we got, and you can get, look, we're at 1213 U Street. Anthony's about to get on the mic. Why don't you come down here and talk about labels a little bit? Right next to Ben's Chili Bowl, you're listening to the Raucous Caucus. Anthony.
Thank you again for having me. I agree. I mean, everybody agrees, of course, that labels in certain cases are stupid. There's no difference between black
people.
That's
a nice label. I like that label. Stupid.
Things along
all labels are stupid. Isn't that
No. I said distinctly.
Let's hear him out.
No difference between black people. No difference between white people. Yeah. We're all people. Kumbaya, hug, all of that stuff. I get that. But the question is, what do we do in the meantime? While we're trying to reprogram our society to stop using these terminologies, I'm still a black man. I still live in America. I still have to deal with certain realities that exist because I am black. And I can't necessarily teach my son, for example, to ignore his blackness because he, too, is a black man, lives in this country, has to live under these certain realities. So I like the idea of phasing it out, but you have to also talk about what to do in the meantime. Secondly, we were talking about political parties. when somebody decides to join a political party to kind of join that team, they are joining the core ideology. They are ascribing themselves to the core ideology of that team. And because of that, we can say you are a Republican,
right?
Big R, and basically leave it at that. Of course, there are exceptions to that rule. They might have personal feelings about this and about that. But given that we're talking about political designation and about how someone acts with regard to their political beliefs, you know, the only thing that really matters is what you do. And if what you do is the party that you join, then, hey, those darn Republicans.
Well, you know, something you said is interesting. I'm not going to say I'm going to challenge it, but I'm going to say something about it a little bit. And that is this. And I think this is an issue because one of the things that I like to talk about a little bit is how labels affect us when we put a label on someone and then they accept that label. Now, one of the things you said is, you know, I'm an African American and I have to live under certain realities. I'm a firm believer that some of the realities we live under are only realities because we believe they're realities. That a lot of people accept the label. For instance, if you were to say, well, I'm an African American, therefore, you know, I'll never be able to. There are people who say, you know, I'm a woman, so I'll never be. I'm an African American, I'll never be. I'm whatever I am. You know what I mean?
It's an excuse.
It's not an excuse. Actually, I don't believe it's an excuse.
No, it's the belief.
I believe that based on the things that they've seen, they truly believe that. Now,
I don't dispute that they truly believe
it. It isn't necessarily so.
But I do think that sometimes people use their ethnicity or how they're born or if they're disabled or their gender as an excuse to say, I can't achieve. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Did you have something?
Well, I just want to add that, you know, I mean, somehow our society really contributes to this because we're a very quantitative society. And we have become more and more quantitative. You know, we measure and stack everything in groups. I mean, educationally we do this, culturally we do this. You know, there's so much percentage of people do this, so much percentage of people do that. This degree of education means that. This degree of education means something else. We're constantly labeling and quantifying and scoring each other, which puts us automatically into a position of being labeled.
Right.
You know, one way or the other. You know, underperforming, you know, handicapped, or whatever the terminology is, we're constantly doing that to each other, which really kind of breaks down, unfortunately. I mean, I know that's not the intention, but it breaks down our commonality.
Well, Terry, I want to ask you about education, because I want to know, and you know, call me names if you want. I can handle
it. Well, okay, we'll call you names. Okay. We certainly want to.
But I want to know.
We just got to come up with some good ones.
If I'm an elitist, and I'm going to give you an example.
The
right?
answer is if.
No, but just let me finish,
of
and then you can
you're
call
if.
Me
names.
Let me give my
example. Guy with the Harvard.
You went to Harvard.
I did.
So did Barack Obama.
So you're
Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones. I can see it right now.
No, that's Yale, all right?
Oh, okay.
Get it straight.
All right. Who cares? It's all the same.
So I am on Fox News, and I'm talking with...
Yeah.
Now, listen, I'm talking...
The prostitution ref.
The prostitution ref. I refudiate that. So I'm there, and I'm arguing with Megyn Kelly, and she's saying, why do so many people think Barack Obama is a socialist? And I point out to her what the poll also shows that she didn't say. The poll shows that if you are highly educated, you're very unlikely to think Barack Obama is a socialist. And if you're uneducated, the percentages were much, much higher. Now, there were other things. If you were a Republican, you're much more likely to think that and so forth. But when I mentioned that to her, she said, so you're calling people dumb. You're saying we're all dumb-dumbs. And she said, now everyone's going to hate you.
Well,
which may well be true, and a lot of those.
You know what,
was that an elitist comment for me to say? I mean, bring it
no,
on.
No, actually, let me think about what she
I
said.
I cited a poll.
What your poll simply said people who are educated as opposed to people who are not educated.
Right.
She changed that.
Right.
She said
smart.
You're saying people are dumb.
She changed education.
So now
to
she's
smart.
Saying she was changing it, saying if you don't have formal education, then you're not intelligent. I think it was kind of there was nothing you were doing that was elitist, but I think it's elitist of her. To say that people who have formal education have a greater intellect than those who don't have formal education.
It's a tactic. It's a constant tactic that happens all the time in politics. It happens socially as well. It even happens occasionally on this show. As soon as you attack the message.
Oh, shut up, stupid.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, right.
See what I mean?
I don't know what you're talking about.
And here's
about.
The other thing.
No, no, no.
Yeah, right, go ahead, Terry, go ahead.
Yeah. The tactic is, as soon as you, you know, shoot the messenger, as soon as you put it onto the messenger, you know, then you can negate the whole subject.
Right. It's an ad hominem attack.
Instead of dealing with the information, which is what you're giving out, no, let's attack you or let's attack whoever we can, rather than grabbing the information.
Well, you know, something that I really want to get back to that we really need to talk about, and that was something that Anthony, kind of a situation he brought up, and that's labels work two ways. Well, a number of ways, but I put a label on you, you put a label on me. But when I put a label on you, part of what happens is how much you accept that label. Let me give you an example. One of the things we talk about is if I say I'm an African-American, there are certain limitations, et cetera, et cetera. When Barack Obama was running, I talked to a gentleman. He was from Southeast, grew up in Southeast, lived in Southeast his whole life. Okay, and I'm a suburban guy. I grew up in suburbs the whole life. And we were talking, and I was saying, you know, I think this guy's going to win. And he was saying, there's no way a black man's never going to win. The society, this country will never let a black man win, et cetera, et cetera.
I heard that on Black Talk Radio all the time.
So what's interesting is this. The label that was put on black people as how much they can achieve, how far they can go, there's a ceiling, et cetera, et cetera. Part of the issue was there are some people who accepted it. Now, I don't like the word excuse, Mark, and I'll tell you why. Because excuse kind of makes me feel as though somebody's coming up with a reason because they don't want to do something, as opposed to a person who feels that there's a block there.
Let me say two things. You done?
Yep.
Okay, two things. First of all, it may shock you to know that most people in the Jewish community that I heard, at least all the people I talked to, they all said years back, from the time I was a little kid, there'll be a black president long before there's a Jewish president. So I got to tell you, if you think blacks think there couldn't be a black president, I guarantee
really, black people are saying that about Jewish people.
The Jews couldn't think there'd be a Jewish president, number one. Number two, no one is saying that it's not more difficult if you are a minority in America. I'm reminded of W.B. Du Bois, who wrote 100 years ago about the talented 10th. He felt that racism was so big, and of course this was 100 years ago. One hopes it's a little better since then. But he felt it was so bad that only 10% of African Americans could rise above their condition and actually achieve in the racist America in which we live. Now, what Du Bois was doing was, one, he was recognizing racism exists, never denied it, made it very clear, but at the same time also making clear that some blacks would be able to rise above their circumstances, and I thought that was the best way of putting it. He never used it as an excuse. He said, it's going to be harder for you, but that doesn't mean you can't achieve.
Right.
We are, by the way, we want to take a break here in just a moment, as you know. Just want to remind everybody this is the Raucous Caucus. WPFW 89.3 FM.
Every Tuesday at
7. Yes. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Terry D. Kester.
And a socialist, radical.
He is not a socialist. He isn't close to a socialist.
Something like that.
I demand to see
Well, that's what
car.
They said on Fox News. They said he was a socialist.
That. What does that prove?
That was
Fox
just a
knows
commentator.
Right. They know nothing.
It was just
and we
on my
are
website.
The Raucous Caucus. We're on every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m., and we're also live right here in Ben's Next Door, which is right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. The food's good. The drinks are cold. I think Terry's had four or five of them from the things before.
That explains
get his,
it.
Get
and
his
we've
nerves.
Got Anthony right here. I mean, what more could you possibly have?
1213 U Street. Come on down.
Yeah. And we're talking about labels tonight. The second half, we got a lot more to talk about, and we want you to come down here and join us. Thank you. We'll be back in a second. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. My name is Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Billy Joel.
And
a guy who knows he's not Billy Joel.
Joseph Stalin, I think, or something like that. That's what they're saying on Fox News.
Something like that. Yeah.
Terry D. Kester.
I was called
here.
The Antichrist on my website.
Wow. That's why you got on black today, and there's a raven flying around your head. I kind of thought, wonder what the Rottweilers were about.
Don't tell people.
So at any rate, we got more to delve into, but Anthony's got this look on his face like he really wants to, you know, set us straight, put us paid, let us have it. Anthony.
So, Anthony's our most regular guest. He's here every single week. We love you, Anthony.
Welcome, Anthony. Welcome.
Now go ahead.
So Garvin asked me a question about what about people who confuse their type for other things. So people, ethnics, for example, who say, because I'm black, I'm not going to excel in school. Because I'm black, I'm not going to excel economically. Those people are what you call confused. They are confusing unrelated issues. Because you are black, you know, the propensity for you to be, for example, mistreated by the police may be greater.
Yes.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't excel. And unfortunately, you know, people are kind of trained in order to thinking that, you know, their blackness is this overcasting shadow with everything in their lives, as opposed to thinking, well, my blackness exists and it has these areas where it might make your life difficult, or where these areas where you have to consider your blackness or consider whatever your type may happen to be under these circumstances. But it's not something you have to carry with you every moment of the day. Prime example, I had a conversation with a colleague where I explained to him that my father taught me how to survive the police. Mm-hmm. He taught me that under certain circumstances, when I engage with the police for whatever reason, there's a way I need to conduct myself. There's certain things I need to do. Mm-hmm. There's certain ways I need to act. There's certain ways I need to respond to ensure that I live and survive that experience. Mm-hmm. Because don't tell anyone, you know, we don't really have good interaction for various reasons.
It may surprise you. My father also taught me how to interact with the police.
Okay,
now, I'm not saying it wasn't more dangerous for you than for me.
Sure.
But he tells you. He told me when I first started driving, if a police, you pull over right away. You don't let him chase you any. Well, you put your hands on the wheel so he can see where your hands are. You turn the light on in the car. And these are things that make him calmer, or her, usually it's a him, calmer when you get stopped. So these are life lessons that apply to everybody.
Well, I don't really know if that's a life lesson applied to other. I've been in situations where white friends of mine, for example, have had interactions with the police. Have had no problem whatsoever.
There's a different
using
reality,
the language
yeah.
of
right.
their choice.
No, I'm not saying it's not.
You know, doing
worse.
All kinds of things right. that very likely could have got someone of a different hue shot in the head.
No doubt.
At the drop of a hat. But nevertheless, the same lessons my father taught me, his father taught him, mm-hmm. his father taught him. And unfortunately, it's likely that I'm going to have to teach my son. So while we're, you know, migrating through this period of stupidity where we all, you know, really judge each other on our type, you know, my kid has to survive. He has to grow up. I got to go to that wedding at some point. So, you know, I do have to, unfortunately, pass certain elements of this along so that my child will survive my society.
Well,
what do you do about
well,
it?
Well, what I'm saying is, too, there's different between realities that exist and how we let them affect us. And what I was saying about labels and how they affect people are this. If I throw something on you, whether or not you hold it, their tests have shown time and time again that when people say negative things about people, that they will assume to some extent those negative aspects. If you say to a kid, little Johnny, you're a bad boy. You say it every year. I mean, say it to him all the time. He's going to start to process that, and he's going to act like bad boys act. Well, why'd you do that? Because that's what bad boys do, Dad. You told me I was a bad boy. And it works that way. But what I was saying about the whole Barack Obama thing, and I use it because it works well, is there are politicians who would say, if you said, hey, you know, you're going to run for president, they'd say, I'm African American. Are you kidding? And in the county where I live, which is predominantly white, a friend of mine who is an attorney was going to run for county council, and everyone, including the powerful Democratic machine in the area, basically said, look, you know, let's face it, you grew up in the area, you're a good guy, everybody likes you, you're black. These people ain't voting for you. Nobody supported him. He couldn't even get any money from the machine. The guy won 54-37%. Now, had he accepted the label like so many people do and said, well, you know, come to think, son of a gun, I am black, he'd have walked away. What I'm saying is he wouldn't have been wrong or a bad guy or stupid for doing that, but so many people do it. Women, so many people look at themselves based on the labels that are put upon them, and they accept them not from an inferiority complex that's born within them, but from a societal inferiority complex that's put upon them. We accept those labels, and then we suffer the consequences.
You bring up a really important point.
Okay.
You know, and that really is about the only freedom you really have. You know, I mean,
you mean we really have freedom?
Well, one.
Okay.
One, you know, is how you react.
Right.
You know, that's the freedom you have, that's the freedom you want to teach your kids. That's the freedom you want to develop within yourself. I can't stop people from labeling me. I can't stop people from insulting me. Mark does it all the time.
Yeah.
I forgive him. You know.
You jerk. I don't do that.
But the point is, you know, you either learn eventually, I hope, and it takes a long time, frankly, especially from the time you're a kid when you're bullied or whatever, but you hopefully learn that you don't have to react like anybody expects you to react. How you control your reaction is up to you. Doesn't mean it doesn't hurt your feelings. Doesn't mean it's not nasty. Doesn't mean it's rude or anything else. But you can control your reaction to a very large degree.
You know, it's interesting to me because there are labels that you wear, right? You have darker skin. People can say African American.
Or some that we like if we think it's a good label.
And then there are labels, and you know, when you're Jewish or when you're gay, these are labels that don't necessarily show up. and people are afraid to show them. As you were talking about people saying they couldn't run for president, there are a lot of people in the gay community that are very afraid to be open about who they are. For one thing, today, even for another year or so, they could be kicked out of the military.
You're right.
you know, they can and are discriminated against. I remember, frankly, when I was in Europe, I experienced a kind of anti-Semitism that I'd never known in the United States. There's always been some.
Right.
It was nothing like that in Europe. When I found myself, if I went to synagogue, I would hide my talit bag, which is this bag where you carry the religious garments. I found myself unconsciously hiding it because I knew that in Switzerland, which you would think would be a peaceful country, there were incidents where Jews were killed and synagogues bombed and things like that. And you end up actually hiding your own identity, sometimes for fear. And so it's amazing how, I mean, there's no question you have to live your life differently because of other people's labels. But I also think that it's important to recognize that when you are free and when the police stop at beating up black people, you know, and stop, you know, picking up, stop people for driving while black. And when anti-Semitism goes down, when anti-gay prejudice goes down, then people are free to be whomever they are. And so it's not just internal, but it's external too. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Right. And it's a combination of both. Do you have another comment? Oh, go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, just to follow up on what you said, I'm glad that you brought up the Barack Obama example, because it's something I talk about all the time. Barack Obama won because he was the overwhelmingly superior candidate.
True.
By any means whatsoever. He also, you know, the presidency is something that kind of happens to you. It's not necessarily something you aspire to. So he saw the situation, you know, he saw the ways the waters were parting for him to be put in that position. And he took it, which is somewhat different from, you know, smaller local politics, state politics, things along those lines. But I get your point. Overwhelmingly, Barack Obama, I'm sorry, our political leaders, you know, just generally speaking, find themselves in a position where they can, and already probably have superseded their race. They're already people of accomplishment. You know, these people don't just kind of come out of nowhere without having lived a life and having...
Let me ask you this, because we always call Barack Obama African-American. It's obviously something that he has adopted. He certainly has an African-American wife. And so
that's the label.
But let's face the fact, and I really want to address this, the fact that his mother was white. He wasn't raised by his father. In fact, of course, his famous book, Dreams of My Father, talks about how really he didn't know his Kenyan father at all. Do you think that had he been, I'll say it, a descendant of slaves, African-Americans on both sides, would he have had the same success? I would ask everybody.
Possibly. But I think, first of all, whenever we talk about race in America, we have to talk about race in America with regard to our culture, with regard to our heritage, and not necessarily think about it like a science project. Because, again, race is stupid. It's, you know, it's a ridiculous concept. But, you know,
it's a construct,
thank you. In America, every time race didn't benefit the powers that be, basically white people, they come up with all these equations and foolishness of what sort about, you know, who's an octoroon, who's, you know, things along those lines, basically to benefit themselves. But the reality of the situation is, if you are of brown hue and you live in the United States of America for any period of time, you're basically an African-American. You're an African-American because that's how this country will treat you. So the real question is, how will you act, how will you be treated when the Klan comes back? And that really determines whether you are or are not a person of color, a black man.
Well, by that definition,
else.
I'm a person of color, too.
Well,
Anthony,
not only that,
they
know,
hate me, too.
You said something interesting, and that is...
You get where I'm going with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no,
you
know,
and what's interesting with that is, whether or not you're black, says when if I tag you with the label black, it has nothing to do with what you are. Now, it has a lot to do with how you're treated. But my nephew went to Howard. And what he said, you know, historically black university, and I said, you know, what? Tell me what about. He said, the weird thing was when I got there, he says, I realized, geez, I might as well be at like a white school. He says, because there were kids from Africa, from various countries. There were black people from all over the world. He said, and I knew nothing about their culture, nothing about them. I knew more about, he grew up in the suburbs.
Right.
He was kind of a privileged kid, private school. He knew, he could identify.
He knew more about the Brady Bunch than he said about
that,
Kenny.
That was him, okay.
Right.
And there were Jamaicans.
Right.
There were black people of many different cultures, and he realized something. Geez, the term black applies to all of us, but we don't have a whole lot in common culturally. The only thing we have in common is our, you know, our skin and our hair is very, very similar. You know, it's interesting, Terry, because ethnically, I know people, white people, who are, you know, look, I'm Irish, and if you call them anything other than Irish, they'll get mad. They're like, you know, proud to be Irish or whatever it is. People who are actually like kind of holding on to what they are that don't want to be categorized in a large group. They want to say, this is what I am. And meanwhile, the world's trying to say, you're, you know, no, you're not. You're a white guy. Well, I'm Italian. I'm Irish. I'm whatever. Don't tell me what I have to be.
You know, one of the things that we're leaving out in this discussion, which really has a big effect on what you're saying about, is economics. I don't want to get into a whole economic discussion here.
This is what it's all about, yeah, ultimately, Terry.
But it really is. And, you know, economically, we're so stratified that it becomes really, really easy to pin labels on people because of whatever economic class they're in. And we do that, and it is very destructive, and it's very limiting. And your point is, I mean, you really can't deny that. If you continually label people that are in a poor economic situation and label them, you know, in various, whatever terminology you use that is negative, yes, it is going to have an effect. And yes, it is going to have a suppressive effect. And you can't deny that. And a lot of this labeling is simply because we sustain the extreme economic division in this country.
Well, you know, something interesting. My sister is an accountant. And I guess as an accountant, she'd look at it this way. But everything you talk to her about, she always says, it's always about money, Garland. It always comes back to money, no matter what. No matter what you talk about, it's the money. And when I say slavery, money, free labor. And she, now tell me what you think about this. One of the things she says about a lot of our labeling is this. The top 1%ers, they're extremely wealthy people. If the other people who are, if we were to actually label people, we could say the extremely wealthy and the other 98% of, you know, the top 2% and other 98%, we kind of all fall in the same label. But they tend to say you're black and you're white or you're whatever to kind of keep us arguing amongst each other so we don't realize that their hands are in our pockets, for one thing. And to keep us from basically unifying. And one of the reasons that the extremely wealthy, one of the reasons that they hate unions is because of what unions does. If you are, oh, the three of us, you're Jewish, I'm black, Terry's white, there's a Puerto Rican guy next to us. If we all live in the same neighborhood, we all work at the same place, we all have the same number of jobs, whatever it is, and we vote based on our economic and social needs, we'll all vote the same. But if they can convince us that you are better than me, and I'm better than him, then we'll get all broken up and unified. What do you think about this? Mark, is it all about money?
First of all, I think you just labeled somebody.
Who?
You labeled the extremely wealthy.
That's right.
Because for one thing, there have always been, they're called derisively by the Republicans, limousine liberals, but Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a very rich man. John F. Kennedy was a very rich man.
Yes.
And yet they acted far more in the interests of poor people than, you know, Richard Nixon or who
so we shouldn't label
a rich
them.
Man. So even the
there's
rich.
There's exceptions.
We can't. So it's interesting. Whenever we say with a business interest, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there are businesses that exploit labor and are cruel and are anti-union and are terrible. There are other businesses that give...
Timberland. Timberland. Do you ever look at the Timberland model? It's a great business.
Google
great.
Is supposed to be a good... So it's hard to discuss anything mm-hmm. without using some kind of label. I agree with Anthony. The one kind of label that I think is fair is a political party label, because that is a choice. You say, I pretty much subscribe to certain principles. Now, admittedly, you can be a Democrat or Republican because of the way you were raised, the way you were born. I talked with a guy last week who I hope is listening to us right now, who told me he was Republican because that's sort of the way he grew up. But, you know, everything he talked about, I said, you're really a Democrat, because he shared Democratic ideals.
He didn't want to shed that label.
But he didn't want to shed that label. So it's fascinating. I do think there's a lot of economic interest in play. I don't deny what your sister did. There's no question about it. Not everyone acts according to their economic interest. There are poor people, as you well know, both you, Garland and Terry, you both know, there are people who are dirt poor, who are against financial reform, who are against health care reform, who are marching with the Tea Party because they think one day they're going to make $100 million, and when that day happens, they want to make sure they're not taxed. Now, I could say they're delusional. And they may well be, since that, you know, they're making $15,000 a year and have no education and have no particular skills that'll get them to that level. But you know, people are all kinds. There are rich people who look out for the poor. There are poor people who look out for the rich. And sometimes it's hard to understand why.
Well, you've got to make the distinction, which we've got to be careful here. There's labels and there's adjectives and adverbs, you know.
And there's groups and subgroups.
And there's groups and subgroups, yeah. But, I mean, you know, a label, what we're really talking about here is not so much an adjective or an adverb, but when groups are labeled, you know, and put into a group that supposedly defines them. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I talk about underclassed people, that is an adjective.
Well, you could say people making under a certain amount. You could define that.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And but it's the key
and talk
point.
About the interests of people who make under $30,000 a year.
Right.
And exactly. That would be accurate without labeling and saying that everyone who makes under $30,000 a year is necessarily a Democrat. Because
they're not. Right.
Well, you know,
exactly.
I have a friend of mine who's from Arkansas, and her father was a retired sheriff. And what's interesting is she talked about his, where he's from, how. There, you know, everybody around is a Republican. And if you felt like you wanted to be a Democrat or you had leanings towards the left, you wouldn't tell the guys in the barbershop. You wouldn't let people know. You'd have to hold on to that label of Republican in town. And, like, when it came time to vote, you know, you go vote for Barack Obama or somewhere, but you'd be, well, wait a minute, Mark's from Nashville.
That's true. Hey, what was the name of that movie Sandra Bullock was in recently with where they adopted the...
The football player thing.
Anyway, I love that movie. I forgot the name of it. But my favorite line in that whole movie mm-hmm. was when Sandra Bullock says to her husband and says, who would have thought that we'd have a black son before we'd meet our first Democrat? Do you remember that? I love that line.
Yeah.
Because, again, it shows all the
people holding on to labels. Yeah,
right.
But so the issue there is someone who's holding on to a label for social reasons where they live. I'm in a small town here in the middle of the South somewhere, and I got to hold on to this label. What are you? I'm a Republican. Because if I don't, I'll be ostracized.
Well, that's the other side of the coin. We aspire to certain labels. And let's face it, we do. And no matter what group we're with, you know, I mean, if you are, you know, to a large degree, and I feel this.
Diddleheads.
You know, maybe this is not fair. But, you know, having taught a little bit in the Alexandria schools, you know, I would say in general that the average African-American young man expects to be, wants to be an athlete of one kind or another. And, no, I'm saying it just from what I observe in the classroom. I've taught first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade.
Don't say the average. Say many do.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of young kids who want to be a pro athlete.
You get them out into the playground, it's a whole different world than it is in the classroom.
But I'm hopeful that Barack Obama's election
changes some of that. I hope so, too. But, I mean, what I'm pointing out is aspiring to certain labels. You know, we aspire to be called doctor. We aspire to be called radio host. You know, we aspire to certain things.
Let me throw this in. Negatively speaking, there are people who, let's say they see something on TV. Again, let's say a young African-American kid hears rap songs with a whole bunch of drugs and shooting and things of that nature. And he sees a rap star, and he says, wow, you know, that guy went to jail. He's rapping about shooting people and drugs. Look at him. He's got all these gold chains. I saw his video. He's got all these women. He wants that label. All these negative things there. And just like, as I said, it depends on what it is. You know, there's white kids that might want to be in whatever particular thing that the whole grunge movement and the government, and there's so many.
There are white kids that like rap music, too.
There's no white kids that like rap music, Mark.
I know that
because I've labeled them all, and they don't like. They may buy 80% of it.
Who do you think buys most of it?
They may buy 80% of the rap music, but they don't like it.
No, what's interesting is that it makes me think of baggy pants. I mean, I think most people know where that begun, you know, with people hanging their pants below,
right.
You can see their drawers. The reason, of course, is because you can't have belts in prison.
Right.
And so bad people in prison would wear their pants low, and people actually saw it as a...
The rap kid started doing it.
That's right. It's a good thing, kind of, in a weird way to celebrate the people
who have been in jail.
I thought
everybody in prison wore a jumpsuit. Right. You know?
Well, you should. Did you wear a jumpsuit, Terry?
Last time
you
I
still,
was in jail.
Still got
yeah.
a couple orange ones left floating around
yeah,
the
you know.
Washington D.C. Department yeah. of Corrections.
Yeah.
I was wondering what that WDOC thing.
WDOC. Hey,
can I raise a question here about labeling?
Okay.
I remember when I was in law school and I had a big battle with people on all kinds about this question. There were some people who said, "Quote, you can't understand because you're not." X,
blank,
unquote,
right.
Because you're not black. Because you're not
hear
Jewish. Because you're not a woman.
The time.
You can't understand you're not
all
a woman.
Uh-huh.
You can't understand. And we don't have a woman here on this panel. You can't understand because you're not a man. Mm-hmm. You can't understand because you're not American. I want to know whether you think that's a fair thing to say or an unfair thing to say. I have my own views. Let me throw it out to both of y'all.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, Terry.
Absolutely unfair. Now, I will grant that most people don't make the effort to compare themselves in. To allow themselves to understand the commonality. But in basic terminology and in basic experience, our emotions are what rule of us. They really are. Whether we like it or not, we impose intellect
upon it. Some more than others.
Yeah, we impose intellect upon it and try to make some progress in controlling
our emotions.
I repudiate
that, too.
Yeah, okay. Yes, you would, because I can see you turning red already. But the point is that we emotionally respond, and you cannot say that people don't have basically the same emotions. They all do. And therefore, if you feel fear as a black man because of certain situations, there are thousands of situations where I, as a white person, have felt fear. I understand fear completely. I understand intimidation. I understand brutality. I understand being chased, being arrested, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an awful lot that we can, in fact, understand about each other. I think maybe, sexually it might be a little more difficult.
Just a little.
Well, you know, but I think it is a little more difficult. But again, even then, I have sat in situations and in discussions and seen things where a woman has expressed her most deep feelings, and you find out that, my God, I understand those feelings completely. There is not a difference, in my opinion. We pretend there is, because, again, that's one way of dividing ourselves and one way of staying with our tribe and one way of separating. But there is not a difference.
So basically, Mark, Terry, we've found that Terry is a woman living in a man's body
yes,
or something.
Yes.
But look,
yes.
Let me
a black woman
car,
living in a man's
car,
body. For pity's sake, get it right.
Right.
Wait, geez,
right.
Enough. Jewish,
well,
too. And I got my yarmulke.
No, let me add this.
And I belong to the Klan.
It works out.
You know,
because
with a yarmulke.
It works out because you're actually...
I'm the only black in the Klan with a yarmulke.
Right. It actually works out that you're actually a gay black woman.
Gay black woman
living in,
Jew
a man's,
in the Klan.
Living in a man's body, and that's
right.
Why you could be married.
There
so
are very few
out.
Of those.
But
right.
Look.
Now I'm really confused. Now, I thought I had my sexuality and my politics all set. Now I have no
now,
idea.
Let me say this. Now, let me disagree with Terry.
Oh.
Which is something that we don't normally see, right?
Of course not.
Well,
why
I'll
would you?
This. Yes. And I'll say that I personally don't think that anyone can understand. I'm the opposite of how Terry. I don't think I can understand what it's like to be Jewish. I don't think I can understand what it's like because you don't go through what people go through. You don't see. Basically, knowing the things that I've saw in my life regarding race, it's hard for me to believe that a person who wasn't an African American.
What you're talking
and
about.
Let me say this.
What you're
let me say this.
About is
now,
context.
What you're saying is. We have the same emotions, yes, but our emotions are triggered in different ways by
yes.
different things.
Yes.
So we can understand the emotions, but we can't understand what we're what will trigger particular emotions based on what happened. So in foundationally, I agree with you regarding the emotions, but what will trigger the emotions, I
well,
think
yeah,
is different.
Well, yeah, but that's social
context.
Let
me give you
that's
an
social
example.
Context,
I can't
obvious.
Imagine what it would be like. Now, I'm an African-American. When I think of slavery, certain things happen, and, I have certain things that come into my mind. Mark is Jewish. I can't imagine what it can be like being Jewish and having probably known some of your ancestors or known grandparents or someone who actually lived through the Holocaust who could tell you what it was like or someone maybe. So I can't possibly say that I could imagine what Mark's
yes,
feelings would
can.
Be
right.
That's the key word. Dealt with.
That's
I want to say something that I rarely say on the Raucous Caucus. I agree with Terry and I disagree with Garland. I really do.
It's time to get this guy out of here.
You're making progress.
He's finally cracked.
I think Terry's absolutely
he's finally
right.
cracked.
Well, the reason I asked this question is actually because I agree with Terry. I remember arguing with people who said, you can't understand because you're not black. You can't understand because you're not Jewish. You can't understand because you're not a woman. And it seems to me that we can understand. Just because we haven't lived through it, there is literature. I have read African-American literature. You, Garland, can hear stories from Holocaust survivors. You can read Jewish literature. We can read women's literature. We can talk to people we know. We can hear. We can learn from each other. And we can even, yes, imagine ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean everybody does it. That doesn't mean that, frankly, most of us do it. Most of us don't. And I think when people say you can't understand because you're not X, what they're really saying is the vast majority of white people haven't taken the time to try to understand what it's like to be black. And there I absolutely agree.
Yeah, but,
but I disagree with the ones that say you can never understand. Because
right.
I think part of being human is our ability to, yes, put ourselves in someone else's shoes.
And the key word that you both have used, which is really so important in this discussion, is imagination. You know, as you know, I spent 90% of my career in theater, acting, directing, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is about imagination. You know, can you, in fact, play this character who's gone through totally different context, totally different experiences in life? Can you play it convincingly to the point where the audience believes you're that character and not just an
well,
actor?
I don't know. I can't even understand women on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, understanding what they...
You need to hang out with more women,
what they actually
Garland.
I grew up in a house with four sisters
and they never explained
and my mother,
to you what
I
it's like?
And I was confused. My
did you ever
entire
sit
life,
down
I had no idea what
them?
Was going on.
Did you ever,
that was what screwed things up when I talked to them. That's when things went downhill. I really got confused then. What the hell are they talking about?
Do you ever experience that feeling you talk about labeling, or you're talking to somebody and you're making a point and it just goes right over their head?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they haven't got a clue as to what you're talking about because their imagination died in 1967?
Yeah.
Wake up and imagine, boy.
Let me tell you this.
Garland's mother and sisters, if you're out there, I think you need to help Garland.
I love you, but I love
what
you
it's
all.
Like
I love
to be
all.
A woman.
I love you all.
It sounds like
you may have
failed your son and brother here.
Well, look, here's what we're going to do. Here's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to give thanks and graciousness to a number of people, not the least of which being, number one, Drew Franklin, our engineer, who keeps things going.
True.
Now, back in the home station there's a gentleman by the name of Sidrak Franklin. He's our board operator.
Hey,
without
Sidrak.
Him, I mean, one slip of the hand and we're quiet.
That's true.
Okay,
don't
thanks.
Tell
for the, way to go.
Don't tell
now,
him.
Of course, there is the queen of quality.
The queen
our producer,
of quality?
Gladys
queen
Brooks.
Hey, Gladys.
Let me tell you something. If she can keep this bunch in line, for God's sake, she ought to be running. She ought to be running the White House.
She ought to be.
Okay.
Never mind.
Hey, Gladys for president.
We
heard it here first.
We want to thank our live audience, particular Anthony. Thank you, Anthony.
Our regular.
Yeah, regular.
He never misses a show.
He's an official.
You too can be like Anthony.
Right.
1213
U Street.
Every Tuesday.
Right.
But you'll never be quite like
and
Anthony.
Of course, no. Right here, we want to thank everyone here at Ben's Next Door. We're right next to Ben's Chili Bowl, 1213 U Street. Nizam and little Mr. Tariq. We want to thank you all for welcoming us here, for being a good friend of WPFW, for supporting us in our station. And, of course, we want to thank WPFW 89.3 FM. Terry, if they want to get in touch with you, what other than, you know, calling the prison or writing letters, what
you
would
know,
they
frankly,
do?
Frankly, after tonight's discussion, I would have them just call you.
Okay.
don't bother me, please.
So how do they get in touch with you, Terry?
TerryTDK at AOL.com. But more importantly, we have our own website, the Raucous Carcass, Facebook, rather.
Yeah, you can
Facebook.
WPFW Dialogue.
And we're individually on Facebook, too. Mark Levine, M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E.
Well, Mark, if they want to hear this.
I even have a fan page. You can go to my Mark Levine fan page on Facebook. And actually, I post the Raucous Caucus audio on my website at marklevineradio.com every week. So if you miss any aspect of this show, go right there and tune in.
And I'm sure all of our listeners watch Fox News, so they probably know you well. That's coming up next,
unlikely.
We got Brother after this craziness and madness.
But how can they find you,
Garland? Oh, you can just Facebook me, Garland Nixon.
Okay.
You want to mellow out, you want to smooth out, get rid of all the anger. Brother Ah and the Jazz Collectors are going to be jamming some smooth stuff.
WPFW, Washington.